Good evening. Let's call to order the Committee of the Whole for Champaign County Board for ELEC Highway and County Facilities. It's Tuesday, November 1st, 2011. The time is 6:05. Roll call, please. We have a quorum. Mr. Kurtz and Ms. Holyfield indicated to me earlier they would not be able to make this meeting. I seek approval of the minutes of the Committee of the Whole for October 4th, 2011.
So moved.
Moved by Mr. Jones, second by Rome. Discussion of the minutes. See none, all in favor?
Aye.
All opposed? Motion carries. Seek approval of the agenda.
Move.
Any agenda?
Second.
Sir, moved by Ms. Kaur, second by Mr. Rosales. Discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
All opposed? Motion carries. Public participation. If you wish to speak in public, please fill out one of those forms. Overnight corner, please. The first speaker is Kevin Parasek.
Good evening. I'm Kevin Parzik with Invenergy Wind out of Chicago, and I'm going to be speaking during the ELEC session.
I'm sorry. Can you repeat that, please?
I'm sorry. I'm with Invenergy to discuss the wind project,
okay.
And I'm going to be speaking during the committee. Thank you.
Michael Blazer. Same thing for you?
Yes, sir. Same thing for you.
Okay. So you represent the wind farm. All right.
I do.
Robert and
Doreen Flugmacher.
Please, if you could speak up the microphone, please.
We're one of the families that is going to be hopefully getting a windmill, and that we want everyone to know that we are very much in favor, feel our schools need these taxes and our roads need the taxes, and feel it's a very good project that needs to really come through. Thank you.
Kim Cambron.
Good evening. Do I have to state my name and all that?
Please do.
My name is Kim Cambron, and I live in rural Rankin, Illinois. And I guess I just wanted to address the committee as a whole tonight. I live in Vermilion County, and I would like to say that Champaign County is pretty lucky because you have zoning. Vermilion County has no zoning. And I will tell you that I've just been amazed. I've been coming to the meetings here, and I'm just amazed at, you know, how things work here. I will tell you that Champaign County has an opportunity to grow itself, I think, in two ways, one of two ways. One is either by people or one is by turbines. And I can guarantee you that there are many, many rural residents that are looking and waiting and watching to see what county we can all move to so that we don't have to live in an industrial power plant. And I just wanted you all to know that tonight, that there are many, many people watching and waiting to see what you all are going to do. And a lot of us would love to come and live in Champaign County, but without turbines. So I just wanted you all to know that. Thank you.
Is there any other public participation? Okay, we'll close that. Any communications from the board? Ms. Petrie.
Just one more time, I'd like to let the constituents of District 6 and the newly formed District 6 that I'm having a town hall on Sunday, 1 to 2 at the Champaign Public Library, Room C. Thank you.
Anything else? Okay, let's move on to the first area, highway transportation. Ms. Kohler? All right, you get to come up here. Apparently some people filled out public participation forms, but they never got to me. Is that true?
Right. We have to put them over there.
Okay.
I move that the chair be authorized to reopen public participation, having already closed it.
Second. Move by Mr. Best, second by Mr. Esri. All in favor?
Aye.
All opposed? Motion carries. Okay. Back to public participation. Bill Ingram.
Bill Ingram, Danville, Canton, Illinois, Vermillion County. I don't have that much to say. Excuse me. The facts and the history I've already discussed numerous times. I will echo the sentiments that at least Champaign has zoning, and they're looking at this rather than just rolling over and taking the words of the developer. My only concern is you need to look into the wind power. I'm not going to argue, debate, or bring up points. I've already done that. Basically, it's the most expensive energy you can get. It will not stand on its own 2 feet without subsidies. Subsidies go as much as 60%. That is your money. You're getting some money for the windmills. You're going to pay back in spades on the reclamation, the roads, when the subsidies are pulled. This is just fact. It's a green dream, and it will not work. How can I say that? The history tells you that's what has happened everywhere. The only people that will come out on this are the Invenergy people. That's all I have to say. I could go on for hours. I give you facts. I could give you one that might stick in your mind. That is, a recent study of the money spent and the actual green jobs made figured out to about $8 million per green job. I have the report. Had to get it on a Freedom of Information Act. That's all I can tell you. You people are all intelligent. You can make up your own minds. But in my opinion, it's a fool's game. And the only people coming out are the developers. Thank you for your time.
Mr. Mike Babb.
I'm Mike Babb. I'm supervisor in Compromise Township, and I just wanted to take this opportunity to express to the county board the benefits that Compromise Township would receive if the wind farm was approved. At our last township meeting, our road commissioner Marvin Johnson was telling us that there's a check for $182,000 waiting for us if the wind farms were approved. And these funds were designed to help with any unexpected expenses from the farm, and also we could use those funds for improving roads and bridges in our township, which would be a big benefit for our township. We are anticipating right now about 28 windmills in Compromise Township. That would generate about $40,000 a year in all of our taxing units for the township. We would have 14 miles improved with this wind farm. We have, I know of at least two of those 14 miles are in extreme need of repair, and the township just didn't have the money. We don't have the money to improve those roads the way they should be. So that's going to be a benefit to the township. It also is a chance to have some economic growth in the rural areas. I know in Compromise Township, no one's going to build a factory. You're not even going to get any subdivisions out there. It's an opportunity not only to benefit the local economy, but all of the taxing bodies. I think about a month or so ago, I saw in the paper where even the county board possibly had put in next year's budget $100,000. Anticipation from the permits from the wind farm. So it would benefit the county, the townships, school districts. I am also on the Armstrong Township High School School Board, which Armstrong is located in Vermilion County, but we do have part of the district is in Champaign County. So the majority of those windmills in Compromise Township would be in Armstrong High School District. But myself, being a board member, I know in Vermilion County we're going to get about 90 windmills for our district. If Champaign County doesn't approve windmills in Champaign County, I'm confident that those 28 windmills will just go east and go to Vermilion County. So as a high school board member, I'm not worried about that, but as a township, Compromise Township official, I am concerned that if they are not allowed in Champaign County, of the economic benefits that we're going to be losing. Thank you.
Mr. Marvin Johnson.
Yes, I'm the highway commissioner in Compromise Township, and I hate to go over too much of what Mike just said, but getting back to our roads, we can't afford to do what they're offering to do. They're going to spend about $158,000 a mile to rebuild them, and in our lifetime, we couldn't afford to do that in Compromise Township with the tax money that's coming in, with the money that's coming to the highway department. I'm just totally in favor of it for the road district. And as a resident, there's going to be windmills across from my house on the setbacks, and I have no opposition to that. So if anybody has any questions or anything, that's my feelings on it.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, one more time. Is there any more public participation? Okay, we'll close it, and let's go back to Mr. Betts.
Mr. Chair.
Sure.
We had folks speaking here about the wind farm, and then we had people from the company reserving the right to speak when the ELUC is in session. Is that same right going to be granted to the other folks?
That's up to the body.
Well, can they reserve it?
Well, I think that, again. Yeah. Right, I mean, the representatives from the company are professionals brought by the company in. They are different than public, different category according to our rules. But, I mean, if the body wants to allow the public to participate, obviously you can do that.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
They are professionals, I will agree, but they are not a disinterested party where they are advising the board in a professional capacity. They are a party that has a specific interest, and I think that's a little bit different.
Well, I guess we'd rather... Okay, well...
My concern is that when we're actually at ELEC, we could be hearing one side that has an interest, and the folks that disagree are not allowed to directly make a presentation contrary to that stated interest while we're actually substantively dealing with the subject.
Well, there's two ways we can do it. I guess we could have the representatives from the company speak now, so that everybody's spoken, or we could open it up to everybody when it comes around to discuss the item on the agenda. Mr. McGinty.
Based on what Tom's saying, I would suggest hearing from the representatives now and then saving our opportunity to suspend the rules accordingly when we reach the ELEC portion of the agenda for questions.
Okay. I think that's probably a good approach. So let's...
Otherwise, I suspect it could be a free-for-all.
It could be. Hopefully that will not happen. Okay, since we've not gone on to... We're still lingering into the public participation. Do the representatives from the company have some prepared statements they can make at this time?
Sure.
Please do. Can I ask you how long this will take?
Just a minute.
I mean, the presentation.
About 15 minutes.
Okay.
Presentation.
You go ahead and hand that out.
Okay.
Point of order.
We have a total of hour for public participation.
But we would have to suspend the rules so that one.
Okay. Is there a motion? We need a motion to suspend the rules for a lot more than 5 minutes. Move by Mr. Langenheim, second by Mr. Richards. Discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
All opposed?
Aye.
Okay, well, you have 5 minutes.
I can do that.
Good evening. My name is Kevin Parzik. I'm Vice President with Invenergy.
Mr. Chairman, Michael Blazer again, counsel for Invenergy. Given the time frame we're dealing with here...
Actually, each of you could have 5 minutes. That's per person.
All right. We'll figure it out. All right. Thank you.
I'll take it. Thank you. Thank you for your time. What I'd like to do, there's an entire presentation that's been passed out. You're welcome to take a look at that. I'd like to focus on the key items towards the end of the presentation, and I'll go to those right now. And that has to do with the approval or the recommendation that had come out of the ZBA. There's a number of items that are listed in there regarding community benefits that I will pass through. But the bottom line is the effort was taken, and I appreciate the time and effort that the ZBA and the staff went through in evaluating our application. And as I understand, as the recommendation came out, there were two issues with regard to the reclamation agreement and the noise compliance. I'd like to point out that I'd like to go through these two items very quickly. The reclamation agreement modifications have been made to the agreement to satisfy ownership matters, and a regular decommissioning estimate will be updated to assure sufficient funds are available, both from the financial assurances as well as the value of the product that's in the ground and available for salvage. Secondly, with regard to noise compliance, a engineering analysis was performed by our consultant HDR, which shows the project to be in compliance with IPCB requirements, and that site-specific engineering analysis is consistent with industry standards in Illinois and throughout the country. With regard to the reclamation agreement, the current draft of the reclamation agreement that we've been discussing with the Assistant State's Attorney reflects the specifics of the ordinance requirements. Early on, there was a discussion about modifying it. It currently reads exactly as the ordinance requires. Two additional items, though, that go above and beyond the ordinance have been added, and those are that an updated decommissioning estimate will be prepared by a licensed engineer every 3 years for the first 13 years, and then 2 years afterwards to assure that the estimates are correct and that the financial assurance will be modified accordingly to reflect those estimates. And as well, the second item that's been added is a minimum financial assurance will be maintained regardless of the potential fluctuations in the revised cost estimates. If in fact it so happens that the commodity prices are very high, there's a minimum financial assurance that will always be held. The reclamation agreement now is such that the structure of the shows assurance that the county will the structure of the financial assurances that are in the reclamation agreement right now exactly, as I said earlier, match the ordinance with regard to letter of credit, escrow account, etc. So early on we were trying to modify that a bit, but now it reflects it exactly. The decommissioning estimate that is part of that agreement includes the material scrap value of the tons of steel and copper in each turbine, but those, as I said earlier, those commodity prices are modified on a regular basis with the estimate, and the financial assurance will be modified accordingly. So it's not as though, as the ordinance reads right now, that an estimate is done at the beginning of the project and that estimate has to hold for the life of the project. Just for reference with regard to commodity prices, this is one section of a turbine tower. There's 68 tons of steel, of a 3/4-inch structural steel in this one piece. So when there are people that are questioning how much scrap value there is, this one piece of structural steel is 68 tons. It's basically just a hollow tube, and when it needs to be reclaimed, it can be cut up and sent to a scrapyard very easily. The ZBA's basis for denial was the possibility that the lien holder's collateral position could result in the county having to pay out of pocket to complete the decommissioning. If, as per the agreement, if the county determines abandonment and must remove the turbines, the financial security funds and the right to seize the steel and copper for scrap value is currently in the draft version of the agreement. And the following terms have been added to the agreement to take care of this. The obligation to perform the reclamation work shall constitute a covenant running with the land, and that all financing and security agreements entered into by the principal, which is Gratiot County, or which is California Ridge Wind, shall be subject to such covenant. In other words, when we finance this project, there will be a requirement in our financing documents that our financiers are in accordance with this, and prior to us receiving our zoning use permits, we will have to show compliance with regard to that. In other words, the lien holders will not be able to take a position for the scrap value. It will be a covenant with the land. With regard to noise pollution levels, the ordinance requires noise levels from each wind farm turbine to be in compliance with the applicable IPCB requirements. IPCB regulates emissions of sound from any source to any receiving Class A land, not a property line, Class A land. And Class A land is defined as including residential property, and it can coexist with Class C land within a larger legal parcel. The noise level must be in compliance at any point within the receiving Class A land, not at the property line. The engineering analysis and expert testimony that was provided by HDR confirms compliance with IPCB noise standards. The state-of-the-art environmental acoustic analysis that was utilized by HDR accounts for variations across Class A land within rural properties and confirms compliance. There was a question as to what happens at the edge of the Class A land. The analysis accounts for that. Even though it is a point receptor in the analysis, it accounts for the variability around that Class A land, the residential land which is around a home. This method of the methodology that was employed is standard for noise analysis throughout Illinois. And regardless of what the engineering analysis says, in the end, California Ridge must be in compliance with IPCB noise standards throughout its operational life. and we must cooperate fully in resolving any noise complaints, including reimbursement for services for a noise consultant if there are any violations arise. The bottom line is we are taking the risk that this project is in compliance with this engineering analysis. We are investing this money based on this engineering analysis, which we have seen to be proven throughout Illinois, the Midwest, etc. It's a common standard used for the wind industry. There has never been any noise noise lawsuits within the state of Illinois that utilize this standard in their engineering analysis, and wind farms have been operating in the state of Illinois well within compliance of PCB standards.
Your time is up.
Thank you.
Your name is Parsec, right?
Parsec.
Okay. You want to speak, sir?
Very briefly.
Go ahead.
I know most of you. Michael Blazer, I'm the attorney for Invenergy that represented them during the ZBA hearings. And I'll try to be as brief as possible, simply to highlight a couple of the things that Mr. Parsec said. I was the one over the last several weeks who had been working with your assistant state's attorney, Joel Fletcher, on the reclamation agreement. And the version that you have before you is dramatically different than the one that we started working on in a number of respects, not the least of which is when it became clear that our initial effort to try and vary the terms of your ordinance wasn't going anywhere, we realized that it was much more important to simply adhere to the terms of your ordinance. So as of about 2 weeks ago, the version that Joel and I began working off of incorporated almost word for word the language of your ordinance dealing with financial assurance. And the only place really that it doesn't incorporate it word for word is in those places where we exceed those requirements. Number one, with a minimum financial assurance, because we heard concerns at the ZBA about the issue of at some point in the future the possibility that the salvage value might exceed the reclamation cost. And there was a perceived risk about that. So we agreed to put in an absolute floor, a mandatory minimum of $25,000 per turbine, below which the financial assurance will never go. That's significant for a couple of reasons. Number one, because it's something that your ordinance doesn't require, but we heard the concerns and we put it in. Number two, for what it's worth, $25,000 as a general matter is the amount that we routinely post at all as financial assurance. We are, in fact, posting significantly greater than that. We're posting approximately $63,000 per turbine to start, which takes into account the cost of decommissioning multiplied by the 210% that's required by your ordinance. The only issue that was really hanging out there as of the end of the ZBA hearings was the concern about the possibility, since a third-party lender will be providing the financing for this project and will therefore have a security interest in the project. There was a concern that of the possibility that 20 or 25 years from now, if an abandonment happened and this reclamation agreement had to be utilized by the county, that some lender down the road might be standing in your way of your ability to make sure that these turbines were taken down. So that is why last week we added the provision that's now attached to the memo that John Hall gave you, and we have complete copies of this, of the latest version of the reclamation agreement, if anybody wants it. But that's why we thought this was most critical. It's the new paragraphs 7A and B on the attachment that John Hall circulated to you. And I think, first and foremost, I think the thing to remember is financial assurance only comes into play in this agreement if down the road California Ridge doesn't meet its obligation to decommission this project if it is in fact abandoned. If 20 years from now California Ridge is gone or bankrupt or whatever it may be, that's when you have to be concerned about the financial assurance, obviously. And that's when the concern also arises about the possibility that a lender may be standing in your way. So what we've indicated in paragraph 7A first is that the obligation imposed on California Ridge to decommission this project is also imposed on anyone holding a security interest, any lien holder, any lender, all the way down the road into the future. Secondly, just to make sure that you know that we've actually complied with this obligation. And again, this is the language that came from us and that we then provided to Mr. Fletcher. This isn't a back and forth here, but not to suggest that the idea came from him. It came from us because it was our effort to try and solve this problem, and I think we did. What we've also indicated in subparagraph 7B, then, is that before we can get a zoning use permit from John Hall, before we can start building a single turbine, we have to provide evidence that our financing agreements in fact acknowledge this obligation that the lien holders, the lenders themselves, will be obligated to perform under this decommissioning obligation if California Ridge disappears. So from our perspective, by adding this language, the concern that was expressed at the ZBA hearing about the possibility that a lender may be standing in your way somewhere down the road has now disappeared, because they will be contractually obligated to decommission this project. And if they don't, then you do. They cannot stand in your way. So that we believe not only was the most critical, it was really the only issue that the ZBA had a concern about at the end of the hearings. How much time do I have left?
Your time is up.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Okay. Any more public participation for the third and last time? All right.
Mr. Chair.
Yes, Mr. Ellis.
All right. I do have some questions for the representatives. In the interest of keeping with the agenda, I wanted to confirm with the parliamentarian that it's appropriate to make a motion to suspend the rules and ask such questions at the time that the agenda item is brought up. I don't have to do it now. I am asking the chair, pointing out to the chair that I want to confirm this with the parliamentarian. The chair doesn't seem to be paying attention.
Trust the chair.
Actually, the rules say it's up to the discretion of the chair.
That's why I said directly to the chair.
And the chair will be Mr. Schrader at the time, so it will be for him to decide. Of course, unless there's a motion to the floor to overrule or to suspend the rules. It will be there to suspend the rules. Okay. Is that clear?
Yeah.
So, Mr. Schrader can bring him on if he wants to, or if he says no, we can ask the rule be suspended. Put it that way.
All right. Let's go to Highway Transportation. Good evening. The first thing on the Highway and Transportation agenda is the monthly reports for September and October 2011.
Second.
Any discussion? If not, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Anyone opposed? Next is the county engineer's report.
The only item on my agenda tonight is a petition from Rick Wolken from Summer Township to replace a culvert. I've included in your packets a copy of the resolution as well as the petition and a copy of a map of the area where the culvert would be replaced. Estimated cost of the project is $36,000, of which half of that cost would come from the County Bridge Fund. And I ask for your approval of that.
Move to approve.
Second.
And second. Any discussion? Ms. Applin?
I just wanted to ask a question. You said half of the cost would come from the County Bridge Fund.
That's correct.
Where does the other half come from?
From the township. It's a 50-50. Yes.
Okay.
Any more discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Anyone opposed? Going to other business?
That's all I have.
Okay, there's nothing for designated, no designated item for the consent agenda.
That one was unanimous.
Oh.
Yep.
Okay, I'm sorry. Okay, item 7B will be on the consent agenda.
Okay, thank you.
Good evening. We have a few items on county facilities this evening. Item A is East Campus Stormwater Management. We had comments from Mr. Maxwell and Jim Padgett and a response by Burns and Clancing Associates. Folks that would like to, we obviously don't have a specific action item. These are comments. Folks that would like to address some of those issues are perfectly welcome to. Otherwise, we would receive them and place them in file. It was a motion by Petrie, seconded by McGinty, to receive and place the comments on the East Campus Stormwater Management Plan on file. Discussion. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, the same. Motion carries. Mr. Reinhart.
Aye, too.
Nope, that was received and placed in file.
Okay. Well, on pages 20 and 25 of your agenda are our monthly reports with, I believe there's anything new or exciting to discuss at this time. If you have any questions.
On page 25 for the fiscal year 10-11 budget, is that the full 12 months or is that 10 to 12 months like the year-to-date actual expenditures?
Year-to-date actual expenditures.
So the line item fiscal year 10-11 budget 9/30/2011, that's year-to-date as not the full budget is using. Is that right?
It's a year-to-date report, and we're still in fiscal 2011. So it's through the first three quarters, December 1st through 9/30, right? Through September 30th?
Correct.
Okay.
I entertain a motion to receive and place on file.
So moved.
Mr. Jones, Mr. James. Discussion. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed, the same. Motion carries. Grant.
On pages 26 through 29, we are asking for permission to apply for a grant for the Illinois Recycling Grant Program. We have limited recycling through Champaign County facilities, most of it being located here at the Brookings Administration Building and the courthouse, where we'd like to look into possible financing and expanding our program, possibly performing a waste audit, reduce our regular waste, and hopefully improve our recycling capability.
Chair would entertain a motion. Ms. Brooks, Ms. Ammons, followed by Mr. James. Discussion. Ms. Petrie.
Well, it's an information question. Are there any statistics? What are the chances of getting this grant? How many applicants, how many grants they tend to give each year, et cetera?
I do not have any statistics on that. This particular grant for that. No, I do not.
Okay.
Other questions? Mr. Richards.
I do. This 2065 monthly invoice number, is that for trash and recycling, or is that what we're currently paying for recycling?
That is trash and waste and recycling.
So that's everything right
that's
now.
Everything included.
Correct. And we're expecting somewhere along the lines of $15,000 probably if we get this. Is that for 1 year that we're expecting?
That would be a one-time grant, and we would use it to possibly, depending on the outcome of our audit, would be to purchase our own recycle containers, maybe placed strategically at one location, or just improve our program altogether. Yes, a one-time grant.
And how would that affect our monthly trash bill, do you think?
Our goal is to maintain or reduce our monthly fees.
Thank you.
All those, any further discussion? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, the same. Motion carries. The finial, is that the thing?
Yes. The finial is back on top of the courthouse. On October the 10th, it was raised back on top. It is now secure, finished, and hopefully it will stay there for a very, very long time. The insurance company and the, I believe, is me. We are in the process of making a final payment from the insurance company to the Dance Wayne Kane Sons for the reinstallation of the finial.
Thank you. You did a good job. And we did it without a ceremony.
All I want to know is, was there any cost, the actual cost to the county for this? Or was it all covered by insurance?
It was all covered by insurance.
Thank you.
Well, there's always cost. The time and effort that was put into by deputies and these people is not free, but, you know, it was covered. I suppose. Okay. My report is, before we go to the addendum, is that Ms. Busey, myself, the sheriff, the superintendent, Mr. Fernhofer, we are very strongly considering doing a study session as part of the Committee of the Whole in January to start addressing some of the issues regarding the jail. I have been sharing with members of the board the very large packet that I received in Denver. I think Mr. Quisenberry has it now. No. You may have it now, and Patsy's requested next. So please feel free to pass it on to another person, because I've only got one copy. I think six people have had it at this point, but if you have an opportunity to go through those materials before we have the meeting in January, I think that'd be useful. There may be, do you have a spare copy still? Okay. There are other copies out there, so, you know, please make sure you get that chance to do that. Other business we have on the addendum.
Point of order, Mr. Representative.
Yes.
Item C, Art Bartel Construction Project Report. Did we skip that? Bottom of the page?
I did skip it. I apologize. I'm always trying to get to the addendums first. I'm sure. Go ahead. Update it.
On page 30, it was still the current balance sheet for our project, and I'd like to inform you that we have finally finished all the paperwork is caught up. We have received our occupancy permit from the city of Urbana and final bill from Rossford Construction, so this project is the construction of 202 Art Bartel is closing out this month and will be closed by the end of this fiscal year.
Questions? Patsy.
Well, I'm just curious then, when will autopsies be done here in this county rather than going to McLean County?
I cannot answer that. I know that we are, all the autopsy sink has been installed. All those cabinets are in place. In the last couple of days, we have installed additional light for him in his room, so I'm assuming they will start at any time.
I'm definitely not volunteering. Astrid?
I have no update on that. We have not installed a cooler anywhere yet.
Other questions? Anything else? Thank you. Now we'll go to the addendum. Within the addendum there is, and I know Pius is probably more aware of this than I am, the opportunity to get some money for the stormwater project. If we use the green technique, we would have to make a decision very quickly. We have given this process to three months, which is until February. This opportunity, I know Patsy was aware of it, and the RPC folks and Pius became keenly aware of it. And there has been a recommendation to apply for the Illinois Green Infrastructure Grant under the Stormwater Retention Infiltration category. And that is the recommendation. I think we before we have a discussion, someone needs to make a motion so we can have proper discussion. Moved by Patsy. Is there a second? Second by Cowart. Discussion.
Sorry, what's my motion to do what?
To apply for the grant. Okay.
The motion is to
apply for that grant.
Yes, to apply the grant.
Yeah. Now, what we need to understand is if we adopt that motion, we are preempting certain things. We would definitely be going with the green approach, which we were going to give ourselves to February to decide what approach we were going to take. We had a very significant timing issue, and as I understand it, and Pius, you corrected me if I'm wrong, the chance of actually obtaining this grant is about 5%.
Actually, if I clarify, last year there were 14 projects out of 154 that were funded. That's 9%, but within the storm water category, only 5%.
Okay. So we would be making a preemptive decision if we were decided to apply this before the February deadline that we gave ourselves. Mr. Quisenberry.
Yeah, I would like to say that given the low chance of acceptance and the fact that I don't see any indication that this board is of one mind yet on what we're doing here, that I can't vote to apply for this grant.
Ms. Berkson.
I don't understand why we would, based on the chance of a small chance of getting this money, go for a $500,000 program without still investigating whether it can be done for $250,000. It got changed from our board request for a green proposal to a best practices proposal, which includes filtering the water, which there's none of in the grade, and it doesn't have to be in the grade. And I don't see why we would not investigate saving $150,000 instead of a 5% chance of getting something.
And I respect where you're coming from. The reason this is here is we have a deadline, and it is not up to me as chairman of this committee or Pius as chairman of the board to simply flat out say, no, we're not going to apply for a grant. It is up to the board to decide whether or not they want to do this. That's why it's there. My own position as chair of the committee is I would urge you to turn down the motion. I don't think it's appropriate. I think the risks are too high, etc. But it is up to the committee. Mr. Weibel, then Mr. Alex.
Some further details. The project needs to be shovel ready. That means the budget needs to be finalized. No changes are allowed after you apply for it. Last year, most of the funds were directed towards urban and downtown projects where the impervious land is about 80 to 100% impervious. Our impervious area is about 63%, which, of course, is not good for us. They think that they're going to have more people applying this year, but they have the same amount of money. So that means more fish, same tank. I know it's all depressing. This information was based on a workshop that Paul Fish from RPC went to that was actually on IGIG grants. So it's unfortunately it's not very encouraging. But the important thing is we have to know what we're doing to apply. Yes. That's the big thing.
And I don't think we've decided that yet.
Mr. Alex?
Given the likelihood of actually getting the money, I think it would be a serious mistake for us to change our direction on this project solely based on the possibility of getting this grant. I appreciate the spirit in which you brought this recommendation, but I will be voting no.
Mr. Jay?
A couple of things I'd like to remind us is that specifically, the green plan is a wonderful idea if you're a green person, but in reality, from our responsibility as county board members, we need to be looking to what's most cost effective. And without question, the original plan was most cost effective. And we also lose some land, additional land in the East Campus area to the green plan, which I'm not sure is a wise move. And then, as I read the minutes, and I apologize because I wasn't at the last committee of the whole meeting, it was indicated that there's no immediacy to the problem. There could be a very serious immediacy to the problem in that Urbana is thinking about redoing their stormwater management plan. They've agreed to go along with this on this one. They may not agree once they redo their plan. I think it's important that we move forward with what we originally decided we were going to do and get this job done and over with.
Any other comments, Mr. Richards?
How green does the plan have to be to qualify? Is this only for the best management practices plan, or would the mixed plan that the committee was talking about qualify?
I personally cannot answer that question.
You could, any project that has some best management practices could apply for the grant. So either you could have a lot or a little, but you could apply.
And we have not reached that point, unfortunately, in our process. Mr. Quisenberry.
I'd like to call the question.
Why don't I just call the roll? Solve that problem. I would ask the clerk to call the roll.
Do you have a second for roll call?
The chair can always call the roll.
Voting on this.
Yes means we apply, no means we don't.
Hammond?
No.
Anderson?
No.
Benzel?
No.
Mercer?
No.
Betts?
No.
Sowers?
No.
Mesri?
No.
James?
No.
Jay?
No.
Jones?
No.
Langenheim?
No.
Maxwell?
No.
McGinty?
No.
Michaels?
No.
Udo?
Unanimous?
No.
O'Connor?
No.
Petrie?
No.
Quisenberry?
No.
Richards?
Yes.
Gonzalez?
No.
Schrader?
No.
White?
No.
Alex?
Motion fails. I just want to share with you that that item was not put on there arbitrarily and capriciously. I thought it was important that the board actually get to know that we share this stuff with you. Mr. Weigel.
I think that hopefully you clarify that that decision doesn't say which direction we're going. It just means we're not applying for a grant.
That's correct. Which is not applying for the grant. Mr. Quisenberry.
Just a point of information. When do you expect we will discuss the merits of the feedback that we've received both from the experts and from Burns Clancy?
I had it on the agenda tonight.
Well, we kind of rushed through accepting and putting it on file, so is there going to be another opportunity to discuss them?
We can make an opportunity anytime you want. I said, does anyone have anything they would? We'll put it on in December.
This is really discussed anyway. It's not on the agenda.
No, it's not an action item. Ela. I'm sorry, go ahead. Brenda, go ahead.
Next up is Mr. Schrader for Ela.
Thank you.
First item on the agenda. Okay, great. First item on the agenda is approval contract extension to allow a few countywide residential electronics collections to occur in 2012. Is there a motion to approve?
So moved.
Mr. Quisenberry, Ms. Cohort, second. Ms. Monty is here this evening if there's any questions. Are there any comments or questions? Ms. Petrie.
Yes, if I sent a message to Ms. Monty inquiring about something. Did you have a chance to get an answer? And if so, could you explain it to the board?
Okay, you had about four or five questions. I emailed you at about 10 o'clock this morning, so maybe you hadn't had a chance to see those. Okay. Right. I had the same type of question about 5 years ago when I first became involved in recycling and trying to coordinate the county's interests with the local community activities with regard to recycling. And it's just not set up in a way where the university can work together to recycle their electronics, computers, and data storage kind of equipment together with the community, because they are accountable to their own plan for recycling and their own rates that they have set. And Springfield, an office in Springfield called Central Management, controls what the university does with their electronics recycling program. This was the case 5 years ago, and I talked today with the current person who heads up their recycling facility, and he's recently hired and hasn't heard of any changes to that policy that they have. So it's not really a possibility as far as I understand.
Thank you very much for checking.
Hey, any more comments, questions? Seeing none, all those in favor, say aye. Opposed, same. Motion carries. Next item is the County Board Special Use Permit, Case 696-S-11. California Ridge Wind Farm, ZBA request denial of wind farm, which consists of 30 wind farm towers, in total with a total nameplate capacity of 48 megawatts, location in Compromise and Ogden Township. Is there a motion? Ms. Petrie, is there a second? Ms. Anderson, discussion.
To clarify the motion, this is to deny as recommended by the ZBA.
As recommended by ZBA, yes, sir.
Thank you.
Mr. O'Connor, that's what the motion is. Discussion. Mr. Alex?
I'd like to make a motion to suspend the rules to ask questions of the Invenergy representatives who are here tonight.
Second.
Second. All those in favor, say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Motion carries. Would the representatives, gentlemen, come forward?
Good evening. Thank you.
Mr. Alex?
Yeah, just a couple of things. On your slide 25 that you presented, so go to the IPCB noise regulations. My understanding is that one issue that came up during the ZBA discussion was whether the IPCB standards apply at a dwelling or at a residential property line. And I notice on your slide 25, the language that you were giving to us tonight was that the noise level must be in compliance, quote, at any point within, unquote, the receiving Class A land, not at the property line. I'm having a little trouble parsing that. Does that suggest that as long as it's in compliance at one point within the land, it could be out of compliance at other points within the land? Does that suggest that it has to be in compliance at every point within the land? And is your definition of Class A land then limited to the dwelling, or is it the entire area as described in the administrative code, which I think describes a dwelling unit as dwelling and land? I'm wondering if you can clarify what your position is on that.
Certainly. There was a lot of discussion about a point location at a residence versus the property line. And the regulation reads, and please correct me if I'm wrong, Mike, that the noise compliance is within that land use, all areas within the land use. So it is at the edges or throughout the land use. I think the distinction that I'd like to make this evening and what I presented here is that the analysis addressed point receptors, if you will, at various locations, at essentially the house location within that land use area. And I think there was a discussion that said that that means that we were only reviewing it at the house. And really what the acoustic analysis did was that point noise level actually represents the noise level across that land use, whether it be the house, the yard with the swing set, etc.
So is your position, if I can follow up, I've got a couple more here. So is your position that the noise has to be within the levels as defined by the IPCB anywhere on the property or just at the dwell?
Anywhere within the Class A land use. Within that property.
You're suggesting that the Class A land use only applies to the dwelling and not to the lawn?
No, that's incorrect. That it includes both the dwelling and the lawn around it.
And you are saying that this installation would be in compliance with the IPCB noise limits at all points within the residential use?
That's correct, within the land use.
If you have a house in the middle of a section-sized farm, that's not a residential area, but within the Class A use, your claim is that it will be compliant within that.
That's correct.
Class A use.
If I could just follow up on that for
sure.
Just one moment, if I may. I think the confusion may have come in, and we tried to resolve it. We tried for weeks to resolve it. But I think the confusion comes in because the IPCB regulations are referred to as property line noise regulations. And I think the assumption came up that what that meant was that you had to be in compliance at a property line. And that's not what is meant in the regulations. And regulations are actually derived from the Illinois Environmental Protection Act, which authorized the Pollution Control Board to pass these regulations. And the particular section of the Act precludes noise above certain numerical standards beyond a property line. And that's, I think, where the confusion came up. You have a property on which there is a noise source. Let's say it's a wind turbine. You have a property here that may be called a receptor, the receiving property. If I own the property where the turbine sits, I can make whatever noise I want within my property boundary. I am prevented from making excessive noise beyond my property boundary. That's why it's called a property line standard. When you're dealing then with the receiving property, as you said, for example, let's call it a 40-acre farm. Not the entire 40 acres will be considered what's called Class A land. Class A land implies the most stringent noise standard, or I should say the lowest allowable levels, which is, in terms of decibels, 61 decibels during the day, 51 decibels at night, generally speaking. But you could have a combination of different land uses within a particular land boundary. You could have farm, you could have outbuildings, and you could have the residential area. The point of the evidence, the point that Mr. Parzyk was making, and the point that was made during the hearing is that, and this was by our acoustic expert, Tim Casey, and it was in his report, it was in his testimony, and there were subsequent communications back and forth where certain questions were asked, which are also in the record, regarding how the measuring was done, were certain reflective surfaces taken into account, and the point is, the evidence indicates, or the evidence confirms, that we're not just going to be in compliance at that one little pinpoint on top of the roof of the house. We will be in compliance throughout the entire Class A portion. We have to be, because irrespective of whether or not your ordinance required us to be in compliance, the IPCB regulations require us to be in compliance.
And your position is that in the case of, say, just a residential lot, if there were such a thing involved, you would confer that would all be Class A land?
Yes.
Okay, thank you. If I can just ask two quick follow-ups and I'll shut up. I want to confirm that when you said there's new language in the reclamation analysis, that's language that was added after the ZBA decision. Is that correct?
That's correct.
That is correct.
That's sent to the state attorney's office after the ZBA decision.
It was actually, there were a couple of minor changes that John wanted to mention that we made during the last ZBA hearing. One of the members of the ZBA caught a couple of typos, so we changed those during the hearing. And then in, I think, the day after the last hearing, once we saw what our notes were of the written recommendation, there was still, and we had gone quite a ways in trying to address this concern about, is a lien holder going to stand in the county's way 20 years from now? And in discussions, frankly, with our outside finance counsel, because this, we have to run this by people who deal with the financing of the project, so we didn't provide you with an agreement that we ultimately couldn't comply with because nobody would lend us any money on it. So we needed to confirm that the lenders would, in fact, be willing to sign on to an obligation to put themselves under the auspices of this reclamation agreement. And that's what we confirmed, because lenders, whether this obligation exists or not, just so you understand, in the wind farm industry, lenders all know that all of these projects are subject to a decommissioning obligation. They always recognize that. So the only difference between every other project that's ever been done and this one is that this one will have financing documents that specifically acknowledge that obligation.
Okay, and finally, I think I know the answer to this question already, but this is a new, this wind energy is a relatively new field. Am I safe in assuming that there are no other bonding vehicles available to you that would mitigate this issue of the potential that scrap value is going to change and so forth in the future? I mean, if there were thousands of counties that were imposing a similar restriction, presumably that you would be able to go to a bonding agency and say, here's what we estimate the salvage value to be, here's how we're going to adjust the value of this over time, here's how we're going to escrow this money. I mean, this agreement essentially puts the county in the position of being the bank, as it were, escrowing the money and having to work with you to revise the decommissioning cost estimate based on changes in salvage value. Is there a third party that could be brought into this issue that would turn this into essentially a performance bond or a reclamation bond and absorb that risk?
Well, certainly a bond would be a different vehicle in lieu of escrow or a letter of credit. The structure that we're envisioning here, because of the need to maintain, make sure that the value is current, we would be performing that responsibility of revising the escrow account. In fact, we will have to be revising it for the first 13 years anyway, as the financial assurance moves from the letter of credit to the escrow. So it's going to be pretty much an annual effort that'll have to take place in that measure, and that's a responsibility that we will hold.
And just so we're clear, I'm sorry.
Use the mic.
Just so we're clear, and I don't want to seem flip about this, but your ordinance requires, starting with a letter of credit, which over the first 12 years flips to an escrow. We heard loud and clear, don't mess with the language of the ordinance, and that's why the agreement now reads the way it does. It's an obligation that exists on every wind farm project. Is it something that could be bonded? I suppose theoretically at some point, but I think the critical thing in terms of the any concern the county may have is, first of all, let's not forget this: the issue of financial assurance only arises if the project has been abandoned, number one. Number two, and that's a determination ultimately that's made by the zoning administrator, and we assumed in 20 years it would still be John Hall. Number two, if the project has been abandoned, first and foremost, the obligation is on California Ridge to decommission the project. Only if we do not, it's abandoned and we don't decommission it, do you then look to your financial assurance. And the ultimate protection that you have per your ordinance, which frankly no other ordinance in the state imposes this obligation, is we not only had to post financial assurance, we had to post 210% of the decommissioning estimate. So I think that's as much coverage as you could possibly want, and then some.
Yeah, I appreciate your time and my board members' patience.
Okay, I've got a line of hands that were up, and I'll start with the first one I saw. Go with Ms. Berkson first, and Ms. Ammons, Mr. Langenheim, and then Mr. Nudo. Okay, Ms. Ammons.
Mr. Chair, I just wanted to ask why this issue didn't go back to the ZBA for reconsideration, since there were changes that came after their initial ruling.
Well, Mr. Fletcher, if you'd like to take that.
The short answer is tonight is the first opportunity when it could go back to the ZBA. This is the first hearing on the matter after the ZBA hearing.
Yes.
At this point, can I make a friendly amendment then to this resolution that I don't know if I can make it to this resolution because this is denial. So actually, I'll wait until after we
do. Okay.
Can I substitute
I have Mr. Langenheim, then Mr. Nudo, and Ms. Petrie. Go ahead. Microphone, please.
I'm interested in the issue of Class A land and noise regulations. How is the extent of Class A land determined, and is it permanently determined? Is it subject to change?
The regulations, it's what we call the 900 regulations. It's a set of regulations in the Illinois Administrative Code. They're enacted by the Pollution Control Board. Those regulations adopt something called the LBCS, the Land-Based Classification System. It's a system that goes back to 2002, and it separates. If you've ever seen SIC codes, SIC codes that separate different types of activities by process or by different type of business, the LBCS is a similar concept. It looks at different types of property and identifies whether they fall into Class A, Class B, or Class C. And there's also a Class U, which is unclassified. So sort of in an overall way to give you the three biggest examples. Commercial, industrial, agricultural are all Class C land. And the difference is not that any one is better or worse than any other. It's that different noise limits apply to each of those classes of land. So you can, in effect, generate more noise into a Class C land than you can into a Class A land. Class A land, either under the current land-based classification system or any of its predecessors, because a few years ago there was a different one. It was called the SLUCM. Residential property has always been Class A. The default with the regulations, regardless of how you might describe the land, is that any land that is used for residential purposes is always subject to the most stringent standard. And even more stringent at night than during the day, so as people's sleep isn't disturbed. So that doesn't change.
Okay, I think I've asked a college question or a grade school question in a college environment. I'm concerned with how you determine the limit of that yard that's being protected. In other words, you've got some people have great big yards, other
right.
people have very small yards. How do you decide whether it's a reasonable area, et cetera?
I've got to give you an answer you're going to hate. We don't. The Illinois Pollution Control Board does. And generally speaking, where there's, you know, if it's the house itself, that's an easy one.
Sure.
Where it gets more difficult is how far away from the house do you go? There's a standard default of 25 feet or so, generally speaking, away from the walls of the house. But you might have a swing set that is 50 feet away from the house. That swing set would probably be considered Class A, but let's say, for example, it's 100 feet away. And in between your house and your swing set that's 100 feet away, there's a barn in the middle. That barn's going to be Class C. So it's really going to depend on a case-by-case basis. But I think the most critical point, because there is no way for me to tell you on a parcel this big that this piece is going to be A, this piece is going to be B, and this piece is going to be C. I think the most important thing to recognize here is that your ordinance requires that we be in compliance at all parts of the Class A land with the Pollution Control Board regulations, regardless. We take the risk, in effect, that if we're in compliance on this Class A piece and we're not here, even though the evidence shows that we are, as Mr. Parzyk pointed out, we take the risk that if we're not in compliance here and we've built this thing, not only are we subject to a violation, but you're entitled to retain your own noise expert to confirm it. We have to reimburse you for retaining that noise expert. And if it in fact turns out that we are in violation, we have to deal with that violation. So regardless of what you may ever do or not do, we're going to be subject to that obligation because that's what the regulations say.
Okay. Okay, we'll go with Mr. Nudo, then Ms. Petrie, then Mr. Quisenberry, Mr. Richards, and then Chair Weibel. Everyone straight on that? Okay.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'll have to, again, as point out as Mr. Alex did, bear with me. I have several questions and a comment. Would you clarify for all of us what the changes are to the reclamation amounts that you are now committing to beyond what was in our packet originally? What have you changed?
The only things that have changed excuse me, I apologize. The only thing, no amounts have changed. The only thing that has been added since the last ZBA hearing are paragraphs 7A and B, which address the issue of
putting the
security interest behind you. So that's the only new language since the ZBA hearing is paragraph 7A and B. Everything else is exactly the same.
So an initial $25,000 and then a guarantee of salvage down the road.
Well, the $25,000 is a minimum. The initial amount will actually be more along the lines of $63,000, which is what the current engineering estimate calculates out to per turbine.
Okay.
So it's essentially about $960,000 to begin with. 210% of that is what would be the initial financial assurance. So on the order of $1.92 million.
Those figures were all in the last version that was before the ZBA. None of that has changed.
Okay. Clarification for the landowners. When they signed leases, are they held harmless for decommissioning?
We've signed what are called wind easement agreements with every landowner. They're fairly lengthy. They have a number of provisions that address that. Number one, we are required to maintain a minimum of $5 million of insurance per parcel. We are required to provide them with financial assurance over and above what we're providing the county to cover the cost of decommissioning. And upon termination of the agreement, we are required to decommission the turbines. And as with our obligation in your reclamation agreement, take the foundations down to 4 feet below ground surface. And there's also a broad form indemnity provision where we indemnify the landowners for any damages, anything that may arise from the presence of the wind turbine on their property.
So with your cash commitments over the 12-year period, what portion is the salvage value represent for the difference? What is that?
It was approximately 84% to start.
The salvage value was about 84% of the physical construction activity that would have to take place. In other words, the crane, the removal. So about 84% is what currently the estimate based on 5-year averages for the tonnage associated with the steel and the copper. That 84% debits out the cost of removing those and taking them down and shipping them out.
84% of the total monies coming to us will come out of salvage.
No, I'm sorry. No, let me step back. Let me clarify that. The cost. I've got the notes here. It was $4 million. It was approximately the engineer's estimate to remove the materials, haul it, was approximately $5 million.
All right.
And the salvage value from those materials is approximately $4 million. So there's about $1 million difference between the physical work and the tonnage value of those materials.
If these things go obsolete, and I think this body's heard me say this before, if these things go obsolete, they'll be obsolete nationwide. Would you agree? It's not just going to be Champaign County. I'm not sure if you've factored in what the salvage value is going to be when that kind of comes on the market. Now, as an example, in the last 3 months, I happen to follow commodities as an investor. And on the end of August, copper was at $4.20 a pound. And 9:30 a month later was $3.15, a 25% drop. 10:31 it went to $3.63, which still is a 13.5% drop. And from yesterday to today, it dropped another 1.2%. It's now at $3.51 a pound. I'm just wondering if And going back to what Mr. Alex said, is there a way that you can bond a percentage of that value for us to have in escrow and work with like an anticipation bond like we do with nursing home receipts in our tax warrants? I guess, you know, you're asking us to be the bank, as Chris said. And you're asking us to be the bank without looking at your P&L, without looking at your balance sheet. I mean, have you provided any of that to us?
No, we have not.
And why wouldn't you if you're asking us to handle that funding?
I would disagree that we're not asking you to be the bank.
Well, in a sense you are, because we're relying on salvage value 20 years from now, which none of us can come up with. I don't know how anybody in this room could come up with that value, just based on the last 3 months of copper.
And the engineering cost estimate that was required by the county that has been performed has incorporated a five-year rolling average for those commodity prices, and that will be updated every 3 or 2 years going forward. This is not a 20-year commitment, 25-year commitment. It will be modified on a regular basis to reflect the ups and downs of commodities market to take an average amount. And in fact, if the price at that particular time, the spot market, is lower for that commodity, that can be used in the estimate as well. But this is a long-term responsibility that we carry with this. And going back to your concern about all these wind turbines being decommissioned at the same time, this is a salvage value. This is just the raw value. This isn't these turbines being reused somewhere in some other location.
No,
this is taking
that.
It down into
the
raw value.
If the market is glutted with steel and copper at the same time, your prices are going to go down. I mean, that's.
Well, I think that's a stretch. I mean, that could happen in just about any industry.
No, you're asking us to fund it in that way. How long are the leases for the landowners?
I'll check on that.
Okay. If you never abandon the project and these things go obsolete, you would you have any responsibility for decommissioning? In other words, if the leases are you're paying them, you know, their set amount, and the project is, you know, they're obsolete, would you ever have any responsibility for decommissioning?
If the easements are through. Is that what you're asking?
Well, I just wondered how long the leases are. And, you know, if they go obsolete before the leases end, and you keep paying the farmers for the value of that, let's just say just a hypothetical on that,
mm-hmm.
What would be there? Is there any decommissioning involved in then until that?
If the wind farm no longer is producing, there's no longer any reason for it to operate,
right.
We have the responsibility per the easement and per this reclamation agreement to take the operation down. In other words,
after a year. After a year, or is that what it's
called? Technically, if they're no longer operating, that's the term for abandonment.
That's all the questions I have. Thank you.
I'll get you that answer in just a moment.
Ms. Petrie.
Thank you very much. I would like to place a substitute motion to my original motion, and that is to remand this back to the ZBA so that appropriate hearings can be held on both of the issues that cause them concern, which is the noise and the decommissioning.
Do you want to put a time limit on that?
Well, at their meeting,
this coming
Thursday, it is already potentially, I mean, it is on the agenda in case something like this.
Okay, is there a second to that motion? Ms. Ammons. Okay, discussion.
I have a follow-up on
that.
Go
right ahead.
Since we're on noise, I would like John Hall to comment on if he could convey to the board with a little bit more detail the ZBA's concern concerning the noise issue. I was at most of the ZBA meetings and didn't hear the testimony of their acoustic engineer, and during those hearings I did have questions myself, but was not appropriate to ask questions then. So I would like to hear a little bit more detail from the perspective of the ZBA.
Yes.
Just requesting this point of order because the motion that was made was to remand it back to the ZBA to make the decision, and
yes.
I think that would be out of order.
Yes.
I agree. Chair agrees. Okay. Discussion on remanding it back, Mr. Weibel.
Question about the noise. To me, it looks like for the Champaign County turbines, there are really only four that are worse.
Point of order. We're talking about the remanding back.
Oh.
Of the motion.
The motion.
To remand it.
Chair.
So, wait, so what's on the floor then?
What's on the floor is to substitute motion,
oh, okay,
to approve the substitute motion,
okay,
to remand it back. That's what's on the floor.
I apologize.
Okay. Mr. Quisenberry.
Yeah, I think I have a procedural question here. I am interested in sending this back to the ZBA, but I would like to know if it's possible for us to do that and still have this on the full county board agenda so that we can act on it post-haste, since the ZBA is going to talk about it.
You would simply have to waive the county board rule requiring the ELEC recommendation at the county board meeting in order to consider it directly from ZBA to the county board meeting on November 17th.
Would it be important to have that intent in the remanding it to the ZBA that we need them to act so that we can act?
I think, and also some direction, too.
Thank you.
Yes. Okay. Mr. Weibel, do you have your hand up?
Yeah, but not on this subject, not on the substitute motion per se.
Mr. McGinney.
Trying to get clarity on what our next steps are from a parliamentary standpoint with regard to the substitute motion. Would we vote simply on the motion? Are we voting yes or no to substitute? I believe it's the prior, not the former, or not the latter.
Correct. Take two votes.
I'm asking from a parliamentary standpoint.
All right.
Just point of clarification on what our next steps are, please.
I will. All right. Mr. Parliamentarian, please.
The motion on the floor is a motion to substitute by sending the matter back to committee, so that if you voted yes on that motion, it would go back to the ZBA and you would never reach the first motion, which was the denial. The
okay.
Substitute is a complete contradiction.
Correct. Mr. Richards.
Point of information, then.
I'm sorry. One moment, please. Yes.
If that's the case, then it would seem to me that discussion on the merits of the issue would be in order. Because if we take this vote and we say yes, it's gone from here, and there's no reason to discuss on why we should do that or not.
I will ask the parliamentarian.
In terms, there is substance to the substantive motion, which addresses two issues in relationship to what we've been talking about all evening. So I believe you can talk about the substance of that motion.
Very good. I stand corrected. Mr. Richards.
Have we added to the motion to substitute the waiver of the county board rules for ELOC approval on the ZBA, Mr. Chair? That was my question. We have not. Well, then I would like to amend the motion to substitute to include that.
That be considered a friendly? No.
I don't think it's friendly.
Okay.
I think that this committee does not have the ability to do that. I think only the full board can waive its own rules.
So we have to do that at the full board. Okay.
We take a sense of the body motion after this that we'd like to do that, but I don't think we have the power to do it here.
Okay. Very good. All right. All right. Further discussion. Yes, Mr. Weibel.
Can I ask anything I want now?
Yeah. Well, not anything, Mr. Weibel.
I can ask about the noise problem. Or noise situation.
I think it pertains. Yes.
Okay. I don't know what you're asking. I'm looking at the turbines in Champaign County. It looks like there's only four that really are close to residences which are not participating. Has there been any effort to sort of move, like say, nudge these wind farms in a direction away from those residences?
We certainly have.
And how much effort does it take?
I mean, the question is how far.
Yeah, how far?
We have. We've moved them. There are limitations based on setbacks, based on environmental conditions, etc. And we have worked to move those away. So we work within the compliance, within the setback, within the noise. Again, we are in compliance at all of these locations.
You know, it's nice to do as best as you can. In particular, I was looking at number 22, I guess, number 25, number, well, no, numbers looking at 16, 22, 25, and 27. They're on your maps that everybody has here. So it looks like 16 you could move south, 25 you could move north. I mean, they're not next to the property line. All the surrounding areas they're participating.
There are limitations that go well beyond, you know, just the green land that's listed there.
Could you tell me about those limitations there?
Well, there are property line limitations, and there may be various wetland limitations as well. Environmental limitations.
How close can it go to a property line? What is the limitation on that?
Your ordinance has some very specific setback requirements. With respect to non-participating landowners, a turbine can be no closer than 1,200 feet.
I understand that. But the property lines that I look on your map, we're all participating.
Within the properties of those with whom we have easement agreements, I mean, the company routinely tries to be responsive to whatever concerns the landowner may have, but within a particular area, we have some latitude on how we can move it around. But I do want to add this, because it's one of the conditions that came out of the ZBA that we agreed to, obviously. There's something in this industry called micro-siting. You have to go quite far along the way of the planning process up until construction before you know exactly where some of these are going to sit.
I understand that.
That issue came up during the ZBA, and there was a concern that some of these may move
closer,
too much closer.
Sure.
So that's one of the reasons why I mentioned 1,200 feet, because one of the things that we agreed to and that was imposed as a condition is that that limit has been pushed out to 1,350 feet. That's as close as we can go in terms of micro-siting.
1,350 to
a principal residence or
not residence, not our property line.
Not property line.
So class A property.
Yes. Well, because again, that's in your ordinance doesn't speak. Yeah. Just like the state ordinances, the state regulations, your ordinance doesn't speak in terms of property lines. It speaks in terms of residence or principal.
I'll say it's those four wind farms. Wind turbines, they're all next to residences which have small plots of land. We're not dealing with the 40 acres, we're dealing with 5 acres or something like that, or less. So in those cases, it'd be nice if you could nudge them away so that it's 1,350 from the property line.
I mean, nudge is a very imprecise.
Well, my math is imprecise.
It's hard to nudge something that weighs 70 tons.
Well,
but
there's a number of factors that we put in when we cite these, and we do try to keep them as far away from residences as possible. There are issues in dealing with the landowners themselves in terms of how the land is being used. What's the best place to put a road to minimize agricultural disruptions? Those sorts of things. I mean, we are always looking to optimize both from our performance, but as well as landowner concerns whenever we do this sort of thing. It's hard for me to get into the specifics of each of these because there's a number of other factors that we get into when we locate these turbines.
Okay, thank you.
Mr. Nudo and Ms. Petrie.
Am I to understand when this gets remanded back to ZBA for the decommissioning portion, just what are we trying to achieve here? I mean, what is it that we're remanding back? My comment to this whole process is it's hard to negotiate with 27 members. And I think the negotiation portion of this belongs with the county board. I'm not convinced we've got the best deal in decommissioning, to be frank with you. Everything's negotiable, correct?
We are The agreement that's in place right now is in accordance with the zoning
right.
ordinance that's been established.
That. I understand that, but everything is negotiable. That's also part of what's going on. And I would suggest that this body create a smaller commission of three or five people in between the remanding back to the ZBA and the final board meeting that we do discuss what is our best options. And I would leave that to the chair, but it just seems to me that if decommissioning is going back and there's no changes, I see no need to send it back. I just don't understand why that portion is going back. And I quite frankly think that 27 members is not a good number to try and negotiate a deal in front of the public. I think this is a something that needs to be done and then brought to the 27 members, and then we agree on it, just like we do all other contracts.
And not to address your question, but to answer your prior question about the term of the easement agreements, it's 25 years with a 10-year option.
Thank you.
Ms. Petrie.
Well, I have a new first question to our state's attorney.
Mr. Fletcher?
Yes. Is that an appropriate procedure that Mr. Nuto just laid out, please?
I think this needs to go back to the Zoning Board of Appeals, and I think this needs to be addressed in a public forum. This is not a collective bargaining agreement. This is a land use decision subject to zoning rules, and it needs to go to the Zoning Board of Appeals. This is not something that can be negotiated in private. This is the public's business. With no, all due respect, and I didn't mean that to be disrespectful to you in any way.
I understand that, but I think it is negotiable with a smaller group if the chair so decides.
Whatever decision is made by the Zoning Board of Appeals needs to ultimately go to the Zoning Board of Appeals before it goes back to the county board, whatever the final form.
I don't have a problem with that, but what are we bringing back to them? What are they going to decide?
Well, at this point, they have not heard the bond language the new language that has been proposed that was handed out tonight by Invenergy. They have not had a chance to review that, to consider it, to hear comments on that.
Okay, can I have my the question I wanted to ask?
Sure.
Can I go back to the noise?
Yes.
They've made some comments about the noise issue. I would like to hear from Mr. Hall if he could, with a little bit more detail, share with the board the concerns that the ZBA had in relationship to this noise issue, because I'm getting mixed information, and I was at both of the ZBA hearings when their noise engineer testified, so I think we need some more clarification on this.
Very well. Ms. Ammons, did you have your hand up?
Can John answer?
Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
With all due respect, I believe we've had better testimony tonight about compliance with the IPCB regulations than we had throughout the 7 ZBA hearings that have been held to date. And I would love to get this testimony verbatim back at the ZBA, because we didn't get anything that good at the ZBA. I don't know why the questions were asked. There's a lot of time spent discussing it, but we did not get that testimony.
Ms. Petrie, anything else? All right. Clemens? Okay. Mr. Langenheim.
This is an editorial comment. I'd like to compliment Mr. Nuto for his eloquent defense of the individual committee structure as opposed to the committee of the whole. He would have that specialized group if this were being discussed by ELUC without everybody.
All right, thank you.
Leave humor to the professionals, would you?
No. Mr. Richards.
No.
Okay. Mr. James, eerily quiet.
Well, I'd like to be quiet, you know me. But in follow-up to Al's comments, I would probably say, like when the ZBA has their meeting, that would be a time that some of the members here that have issues should go and give that information at that time and let them hear what some of our concerns are, if they can. And on Patsy's question on the noise, I think the gentleman, and if it wasn't presented before, I based on what they said tonight, it was a lot of information, and it made a lot of sense to me.
Mr. Mosher.
I'm involved in the Dogtown Wind Farm Ford in Ford County. They indicated to us that there is technology now, and they intend to use it if they build it. They have a noise sensor on every one of those windmills, so they know what's going on with each one of them at all the time. Is that technology available, or?
I'm not aware. I mean, one can always monitor noise levels at various locations.
And frankly, not to suggest that some other wind farm company may be telling you something that isn't of any value, but frankly, it wouldn't be of any value because your concern is not the level of noise that's being generated at the turbine. It's the level of noise that's being generated at somebody's residence somewhere away from the turbine. So I could be measuring anything I want at the turbine head itself, but it's really not at all relevant to what I may be doing to somebody who's living 1,200 feet away from that turbine. That's the critical issue.
Mr. McGinney?
I'm trying to get a feel for what's next, as usual. So we send this back to the ZBA. I'm guessing we're going to end up sending it back to the ZBA. Then what will come back to us procedurally? What will we be deciding? ZBA will come back with some sort of recommendation. We just act on that. I assume those are the next steps.
Correct. Something Mr. Hall slid in front of me, too, was on our desk this evening, a memorandum this evening. And you'll find on page... I lost that. Page three, there's two directives we also probably should give the ZBA for Thursday evening.
And
page three, top of page. The first one and two.
And time frame. Critical, it'll go back to ZBA for this Thursday.
Thursday, yes.
And then we would deal with this at the full board meeting? Okay, thank you.
Yes.
I mean, the other alternative, if you're not comfortable dealing it with at the next full board meeting, is to schedule a special ELUC committee of the whole meeting between now and the board meeting, between the ZBA meeting this Thursday and the county board meeting 2 weeks later. But you don't have to do that if you waive the rules and take it directly from ZBA at the county board meeting. The critical thing is it has to be done this month.
Mr. Alex?
Does the motion then have to be amended to include these, the substitute motion to remand have to be amended to include these conditions that Mr. Hall recommends? And in addition, does it need to be amended to forward this to the full board with no recommendation in order for it to be on the agenda, or will it be on the agenda anyway?
No. Be on the agenda anyway. And the directives, I believe, as a parliamentarian, if they would be friendly. Thank you.
Procedurally, what you can do is send it back. Someone can make an amendment to add that language to the substitute and get it seconded and then vote on it. The other thing you can do is when it goes to ZBA, but you're going to put it on the county full agenda, but you're skipping the ELUC COW, before you put it on the agenda, have a written right in there motion to suspend the rules so that everyone knows that that's what you're going to have to do in order to have it as full board. And you could take the chair of this committee this evening, put the sense of the body to make sure everyone is willing to do that on the 17th, and I think you've got your ducks in a row.
Okay.
I would like to make a motion to amend the substitute motion on the floor to incorporate the three conditions recommended by Mr. Hall.
Seconded by Mr. Quisenberry. Discussion on the substitute. Mr. Jay?
Well, I'm not sure this is all on a substitute, but I'd like to ask John a question. Does, including what we just moved or just proposed, does this, do you think, I know you don't answer for the ZBA, but do you think this answers the ZBA's concerns?
I think it possibly could if we get the same testimony at the ZBA, it's very clear to get this back to this board on the 17th. There can't be a lot of time spent at ZBA on Thursday evening. A lot of the things that you're sending it back for shouldn't take a lot of time. And I frankly would love to see what would come back. Who knows?
Okay. Mr. Quisenberry? Mr. Benzel?
Procedurally, I guess, again, a couple of things. Is it remotely possible that this could go to ZBA and they talk about it Thursday night all night, make no consensus, and we get no vote out of them so that we have nothing to move on going forward? I mean, is that remotely possible that they don't have to take any action, which, again, puts us in jeopardy of the time constraint?
Go ahead.
I believe the bylaws require a definitive recommendation from the ZBA.
So if we send this back to them, they have to act on it Thursday night. Okay, good.
Well, and don't forget the ZBA, too, is also the public hearing body of this. So if we're directing them with this new information, subsequently goes out to the public. And that's...
Which kind of goes into part two of my question. I believe the state statute says that we have to act within 30 days or there has to be a hearing within 30 days of our action. Is that correct? If we remand this back to them, does that start the clock ticking again? So if we send this back to them Thursday night, we got 30 days from then. I'm not trying to push this back. I'd like to have this done. I'm asking a question.
Mr. Fletcher,
how big
can answer
my eyes
it?
Just got.
Yeah. Mr. Fletcher, step up, please.
Sorry. I believe the hearing would be reopened at that point, but at any rate, if it comes back to the county board this month anyway, it's going to be within the 30 days, regardless of which timeline you use. And also, while I have the mic, I think I misunderstood Mr. Nudo's proposal earlier, and I just wanted to clarify something. I believe he was suggesting a public subcommittee, discuss this, and I don't see a legal problem with that as long as it goes to ZBA in final form before it comes to the county board. That might be a scheduling issue, but there's no legal issue with that proposal. And I apologize to Mr. Nudo for misunderstanding his point.
Okay. Any more discussion on the motion to amend? Thank you. All right. Mr. Quisenberry.
Point of order, we're voting now to Mr. Alex's amendments to Patch's.
To the substitute motion, yes. Okay. That means if you're in favor of adding the three directives, vote yes. If you're not, vote no. Okay. Everyone understand? Clear as mud. I understand. Okay. All those in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
Aye.
Motion carries. Okay. Now we're back to the substitute motion. Mr. Alex.
I would like to speak to the substitute motion as amended briefly. With respect to Mr. Nudo, this isn't really a business deal. This is a petitioner coming to the county for a special use permit under the terms of our ordinance and requesting certain variances to that ordinance. And the appropriate venue for hearing that is, as far as I'm concerned, the Zoning Board of Appeals. So I think that we're taking the right step here. I mean, I'm personally not convinced of the economics of wind power, and this is the business that these guys are in, and they obviously are convinced, or they wouldn't be putting their money into it. I don't think it's our position as a county board to weigh in on whether, you know, wind power is good or bad or profitable or not. I think our obligation is just to make sure that whatever they do isn't putting the neighbors at inconvenience or putting the taxpayers at risk. I understand definitely the logic behind this offsetting of reclamation costs with salvage value. I think that's something that was frankly probably overlooked in the original ordinance and something that we need to look at going forward. But as Mr. Nudo said, you know, we're not we don't want to put the Champaign County taxpayers in the commodity speculation business. I mean, these are commodities with very volatile pricing. I did a similar exercise to Al and went and looked at the prices the other day and was astounded at the, it was even more volatile than I thought it was. There's, I guess there are at least copper futures, but they only go out 5 years, and there's nothing for steel or just new steel at this point, let alone scrap steel, so it's not something that we can expect to hedge. That being said, I think the proposal to use essentially a five-year, you know, moving average to adjust the reclamation costs, I think the fact that we're talking about putting a floor on the amount of cost that can be offset, that you can, against which you can offset salvage value, I think this idea of a covenant to give the county some protection against superior lenders, cherry-picking the good salvage value is the term that was used at the ZBA. I mean, I think these represent good faith efforts to comply with the ordinance. In addition, I guess I would point out the county is going to get some revenue out of this. I mean, this is not entirely a situation. You know, I tend to be very averse to these, you know, privatized profit and public risk type deals. But you know, if this does persist for any length of time, the county stands to receive revenue that's significantly in excess of what it would cost to do the decommissioning anyway. So I think we need to keep that in mind. You know, zoning doesn't mean that we decide what people get to build. I mean, it just means that we need to. It's a tool that we can use to help mitigate the impacts of what one landowner does versus what another landowner does. I guess finally, since I'm taking way too long, I just think the ZBA is the most appropriate venue for this. I think this is obviously the first application we've gotten under a new ordinance, and I would hope that some of the decisions that are made by the ZBA, made by the county board here, encourage us to go look at this ordinance and determine how to make it more consistent. And I don't think necessarily that what the ZBA has given us now is a consistent enough record to use to move forward to revise the ordinance. So for all those reasons, I support remanding this to the ZBA.
Okay. Any more comments? Questions? Board? Okay. Roll call. Is there a second? There's a second. All right. Before we do, I want to ask the parliamentarian the suggestion you'd made for the agenda item to amend or to the board rules, to amend board rules to allow.
So, well, I'm not suggesting that you amend the board rules. I'm suggesting that the first item, once you put this on the agenda, before you have enlisting and creating the agenda, before you vote on this, you need a motion to suspend the rules. So you should put that motion on it, and then assuming this substitute motion passes, I think at the discretion of the chair of the committee, you could have a straw vote to see whether folks are willing to in fact suspend the rules on the 17th.
Okay, timing on that. I need to know that. Okay, thank you very much. Okay. Are there any more questions or anything? And everyone know what we're voting on? Okay. All right. All right, pull the board, please.
Bannon? Yes. Anderson?
Yes.
Bentzel?
Yes.
Berkson?
Yes.
Betts?
Yes.
Howard?
Yes.
Esri?
Yes.
James?
Yes.
Jay?
Yes.
Jones?
Yes.
Langenheim?
Yes.
Maxwell?
Yes.
McGinty?
Yes.
Michaels?
Yes.
Mosier?
No.
Nudo?
Yes.
O'Connor?
Yes.
Petrie?
Yes.
Quisenberry?
Yes.
Rosales?
Yes.
Schrader?
Yes.
Whitehall?
Yes.
Okay.
Miss Richards.
Motion.
Yes.
I'm sorry.
You miss Richards.
Richards.
Which would be a yes.
Sorry, Mr. Richards. Okay. Mr. Richards is a yes. Okay. Motion approved. Okay. Next on the agenda is the approval of proposed Champaign County. Sorry, Mr. Richards. Oh, I'm sorry. Straw vote. I'm sorry. I have a straw vote on the agenda for the county board meeting on the 17th. To waive, to suspend rules. To, okay. So one, two, three. Okay, we got enough. All right, very good. Thank you. All right, thank you, Mr. Hall. Next on the agenda.
Mr. Chairman, may I ask the
Mr. Betts.
An inquiry. We are creating precedent here, which I think is very, very good. We're also creating a tremendous amount of legislative history. And one of the people said, well, if we had this verbatim at the ZBA, it might have been different. I hope we are going to be able to preserve the video record and the comments that were made here, because I think it would be very illustrative if there ever was interpretive litigation in the future. I think the comments that were made here are very, very valuable for anyone in the future, so I hope we do have a method of preserving what was said here tonight.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Betts. Very good. Okay. Next on the agenda, approval of proposed Champaign County, California Ridge Wind Farm Roads Agreement. Their motion. Approved, Mr. Esri. Second, Ms. Colbert. Discussion. Mr. Quisenberry.
Shouldn't we postpone action on this until the full board meeting?
Noise and the covenant.
Probably.
Yes. Okay.
Make a motion, Quisenberry. Go ahead and make a motion.
There are no issues. This can come
to the
floor.
Right, Chair?
With your job.
Right.
Okay, it's up to the discretion of the board, but if we don't have a passage on the 17th, this is null and void anyway. So, and the attorney for the road district is also here this evening, and I don't know if he's wanting to give... I apologize.
Monday, and I cannot come back later in the morning.
Okay. If she's willing to make a comment, we could suspend the rules and let her speak. If
sure, why not,
Mr. Quisenberry?
Yeah, I think what I'm getting at is perhaps we should forward this to the full county board with no recommendation.
That's one alternative we can do, yes.
Then I'd like to make a motion to substitute that we forward this to the full county board with no recommendation.
Second. Motion by Mr. Quisenberry, seconded by Mr. McGinty. Discussion. Mr. Quisenberry.
And then I'd like to make a motion to suspend the rules to have the...
attorney for the road district. Okay. There's a second to suspend. Mr. Langenheim. All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. All right. Counselor, if you'd like to. Please state your name. Thank you.
Good evening. My name is Cheryl Kuzma. I'm with the firm of Myers, Barry, O'Connor, and Kuzma in Ottawa, Illinois. I did drive 2 hours tonight, so I do appreciate you talking to me tonight about the road agreement. And it is also the case I will be starting a three-week trial on Monday, so I will not be able to come back in the future. I did not prepare any comments specifically for tonight. It's my understanding that if you have questions, I'm here to answer those questions.
Very well. Does the board have any questions? Mr. Alex.
Yeah, I think the only question is, from your standpoint, is this something the road district's comfortable with?
Well, the township road districts are comfortable with it, and compromise township road commissioner and the Ogden township road commissioners have already signed their road agreements, specifically with regard to the county road agreement. We have been through the negotiations on this agreement for about 2 years, and I don't want to put words into the mouth of your county engineer, Jeff Blue, but I believe he is comfortable with it and has recommended that the board sign it.
I'm sorry, who are you here representing?
I represent both the county with regard to their road agreement. Pardon me. I've been sitting in the back a long while. I'm getting a little dried out here. But I also represented the road districts on their road agreements, the three road districts that were affected by the project.
The three township road districts.
Correct.
And your position is that, or your impression is that they are already, they've already signed up.
They've already signed it, yes.
Okay. Well, we'll let Mr. Blue speak for himself. Thanks.
Okay.
Okay. Mr. Weibel.
Are there any major differences between the township contracts and the contract with the county?
I would not. No, there's no significant differences.
Have you worked with similar agreements in other counties?
Yes, I have. I've represented Lee County on a number of road agreements. I've represented Bureau County on a number of road agreements. I represented DeKalb County on a road agreement, and I can't even count the number of road districts.
Okay. Would you say that are there any major differences from these contracts than from other recent county contracts? Similar contracts you've worked with?
No significant differences, no.
Okay. How about early ones?
Yes, we've learned a lot from the early road agreements, and the road agreements that I recommend now to legislative bodies such as this one are much more detailed than what I started out recommending.
Are you familiar with the contracts that they use in McLean County?
No, I'm not.
Okay.
Okay, any more questions? Ms. Petrie.
You just indicated that these contracts are much more detailed than the first round that you worked on. Could you specify some of the things that, with your experience over time, you found it important to include in these contracts?
The first road agreement I did, I believe, was dated 2002, so almost 10 years ago in Bureau County. And what I try to be more detailed about now are the specifics as to the road repairs that we expect after project completion. Also, this road agreement and several others I've recently done provide for what I call degradation damage or loss of useful life, in that with the county road at stake here, we don't expect there to be a whole lot of physical damage to the road, but we know that because of the traffic associated with the wind farm, it's going to take away the expected useful lifespan of that road, and that is a new concept within the past few years.
Okay, anybody else? Mr. Mosier?
I know personally that this is a much better contract than they got in Ford County, because all you got to do is drive up there and see what's happened since it was started. And this looks to me like this is 10 times as good as they did, and they needed all the help they could get, and they didn't get it.
My number is 815-434 for phase two.
Any further questions? All right. Thank you very much.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be of service to this board.
Okay. Back to Mr. Quisenberry.
Yes, can we hear Mr. Blue's comments on the appropriateness
Absolutely.
Of the agreement?
As Cheryl said, I think this is a very good road use agreement. We've got all of our bases covered as far as I can tell. Got payments per tower back to the county highway fund for all the time and effort that we've put into this. There is provisions in there for if the road does fail, if it ruts, if we actually see no significant problems with the road. How we're doing that is with our pavement management system. Applied Research Associates has run it before they start construction. They would run the road with the same equipment they use on our pavement management system after the wind farm development is complete, and there's a formula to actually calculate the amount of life that is lost in a roadway based on the parameters that they use for our pavement management system. So regardless of whether it just cracks or whether it ruts or whether we have some failures along the roadway, we have all of those bases covered.
And
again, they're only using 2 miles of county highways, so this isn't a significant impact on our county highway system. It is only 2 miles up along County Road 22, north of Royal, south of Penfield.
Okay. Ms. Petrie?
I have two information questions. Does this cover any side erosion that might occur when the roads are rebuilt?
It actually states that they have to follow all of the IDOT standards, and all the IDOT standards have that within them.
Okay, and my second question is, when it comes to decommissioning time, is the reconstruction of the road to take out the turbines, even if cut up into smaller sections, covered with the East Road agreements?
I don't know if the Township Road Agreement. Cheryl, can you address that?
The road agreements only cover the construction and a 3-year warranty period following construction. If the project is decommissioned, they would need a separate road agreement covering that decommissioning process.
Okay.
Thank you.
Okay. Any further questions? Mr. Blue?
Anything else?
Okay. Mr. Betts.
I guess I'd ask you, do you have any concerns about the fact that we don't have an agreement with regard to decommissioning in terms of the roads?
That's a policy decision for the board. I'm the county engineer. I'm just worried about my roads. Obviously, you have to have a road use agreement before you can have a special use permit that's granted to any wind farm development. So,
was this issue when this was being negotiated?
Proceed.
When we were negotiating that road agreement, was the subject of decommissioning discussion?
No. Not specifically. This is specifically for the putting up of the towers or the building of the wind farm development, not anything to do with later times. Am I correct, Cheryl?
Can I ask that?
Absolutely.
For the road use agreements, I view those as two separate issues, and the decommissioning part of the project is something that I leave to the zoning and land use portion of my clients to handle. Also, decommissioning is going to happen typically so far in the future that my crystal ball doesn't go that far, and I don't recommend that my clients, especially my road commissioner clients, enter into road agreements that might bind future elected officials, indeed future elected officials that might not even be born at the time we sign this agreement. So we don't include that in the current road use agreement.
Chair Weibel. Okay. Mr. Langenheim.
Is there any likelihood that we could be prevented from calling for a new agreement for decommissioning?
Did you understand that?
No, I didn't.
Okay.
You stated that our current agreement covers the installation and that there will have to be a separate agreement for decommissioning. Are we in a position to demand a separate agreement for decommissioning?
I'm not familiar with all aspects of your zoning ordinance, but I don't think it's contemplated by your zoning ordinance. And I wouldn't begin to know how to negotiate that road agreement. And at this stage of the game, I can't recommend it to this board.
Do you care to comment about the ordinance?
The ordinance requires an amount to be included in the financial assurance for road damage during decommissioning. The current reclamation agreement includes $10,000 per turbine, a total of $300,000 for road repairs. It occurs to me it would be good to add a condition requiring a new road agreement at that time just to nail it down. But obviously the agreement can't be formulated now, but it would be good to include a condition requiring that in the future. But we do have $300,000 for that.
Okay, well, just for the record, I think we should require that.
Mr. Quisenberry.
Mr. Hall, is it anticipated that the decommissioning road use would be different from the installation road use, because much of the scrap would be cut up on site and then trucked out on smaller trucks?
Yes, and it's my understanding that the strengthening that will be done pursuant to wind farm construction, those roads should be much stronger when it's time to decommission.
All right, thank you.
Okay. Any other questions or comments? Okay, very good. Thank you. Okay, the motion is to send to the full board with no recommendation. Okay. Roll call, Mr. Langenheim. Is there a second? Or Mr. Betts, second. All right. We'll have a roll call. Any more questions or comments? Going, gone. Okay. Pull the board, please.
Evans?
Yes.
Anderson?
Yes.
Bensel?
Yes.
Ferguson?
Yes.
Betts?
Yes.
Cowart?
Yes.
Esri?
Yes.
James?
Yes.
Jay?
Yes.
Jones?
Yes.
Langenheim?
Yes.
Maxwell?
Yes.
McGinty?
Yes.
Michaels?
Yes.
Mosher?
Yes.
Rudo?
Yes.
O'Connor?
Yes.
Petrie?
Yes.
Quisenberry?
Yes.
Richards?
Yes.
Rosales?
Yes.
Schrader?
Yes.
Weibel?
Yes.
Allen?
Yes.
Motion carries. Next on the agenda, monthly reports.
Apologize to the committee. I did not get one prepared.
Okay. And other business, I think John has an introduction to make.
Oh, I'd like to introduce to the county board the new associate planner, Andrew Cass. Andrew, stand up, please. Thank you.
Anything else on other business?
Looks like a young John.
Okay. next item. Designation of items to be placed on the consent agenda. I think there's only one. Is that correct? A. Okay. Okay. We're adjourned. I'm going to make it a